us out. Here is my handle. Here is some boiling water on your leg.
Hi! Hi!
I hope so. I mean, he ran out screaming.
It's a good thing he's made of fiber.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's more the idea than actually the pain. Because
yeah. I think he hurt his feelings more than he actually did his
When we count all the time, we've sewn that poor little sock monkey back together.
I know, putting his eyeball back
Putting his eyeball back in, stitching his tail back on. It's terrible. And then there was the whole incident where he got thrown into the wall in London.
Yeah, there was that.
Oh, that was horrible.
That was dreadful.
I took them to London and Rashi convinced Super Rika that he could go to Hogwarts if he ran toward this wall in the train station really hard and threw himself into it. And they actually have that, you know,
the platform.
The platform there, and they have, and it's very cute. They have a baggage wagon halfway in and halfway out of the wall. Mm-hmm. And Super Rika went running for it, and I tried to stop him, and he
just succeeded in puncturing his face and knocking off his little wizard hat.
His little wizard hat. And Rashi laughed at him and kicked him. And mm-hmm. meanwhile, British people are walking by and just going, typical tourists, we see it. We see it 100 times a day.
Well, it's almost live with Paul and Misty, and you are...
Paul Dini, and it just occurred to me that I did the worst English accent. I didn't even try to do an English accent.
No, that was not even... I wouldn't even count that as a worst English accent.
That wasn't even Welsh or Scottish. It was just sort of like, you know, idiot American.
That's fine. So, and Emily and Ezra...
And you are...
Yeah.
I already said it.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Yeah, we're all here.
Yeah, so we're talking about the boys being fabric, and Ezra went somewhere really cool this week, so why don't we start with you, dude?
Oh, okay.
Where'd you go? Hey, well, who just snarfed? Was that Emily or was it Muggsy?
I think that was Muggsy.
Oh, I'd be worried if it was me. I thought it was you.
Came over on my shoulder, so. I for my birthday last week, Emily was generous enough to get me puppet school.
Puppet school?
Yes, and it wasn't just the learning how to do puppets, it was actually create your own.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes. No, I just want to clarify that for the audience, because just hearing the name of it, your mind wanders. You wonder what could be involved. So, yeah, so it came in, and they taught us how to make a puppet. And here's my puppet.
Oh, my God, you brought
you
it.
You brought your puppet.
You kept it secret the whole time.
Yes,
secret
I did.
Secret mystery puppet.
Hey, that's
right
a really here. Good puppet.
Yeah.
That's great.
Isn't he awesome?
Yeah.
So he's a Muppet-like Sesame Street puppet, a sock variation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
he looks like
he has
you,
the
Ezra.
Ping pong ball eyes, and he has a little a bit of hair. And
just like
a reddish
ping
color.
Pong ball eyes and a little bit of hair.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Now, did they have the basic form there, or did you stitch it all together?
He gave us the cloth and the L200, which is the foam stuff inside the mouth.
Wow.
And we cut it out, and I glued it together, making the skeletal structure. And then I sewed together the body, and I sewed on the mouth using Henson stitch. I learned how to do
the ladder
stitch.
The Henson stitch. Oh, yep, very nice. Yep.
Oh, look at that, right down the middle. There it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, gave him ping pong ball his eyes and the whole ball of wax. Gave him little arms with rods. And now I got myself a handy little puppet. His name's Crash.
Crash!
Yeah!
He's
cute.
Well, I got to describe him for our readers. He's like a deep red color with bright red, a shock of bright red hair.
Uh-huh.
And lovely kind of orange-lidded eyes. And... yeah. Really cool, real cool looking. Really, really cool.
Oh, he's
thank
got
you.
Paddle hands.
Paddle hands, yeah. Paddle shaped hands. And he looks a little, what do you say? Not really reptilian. He actually kind of looks a little like a crab. You know, not a real crab, but a cartoon crab.
Are you back on the crab from that last podcast?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out like the wide mouth.
He doesn't look like crab with a K. He sort of looks like Sebastian. He's almost the same color as Sebastian.
Yeah. He also reminds me of like a variation of an Elmo or Cookie Monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely got some Elmo. There.
He's got that monster fur thing kicking.
Yeah.
And the perma smile. It's sort of grinned on the corners.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of that micro expression contempt kicking. Close his mouth. Watch this, guys. See this?
Oh yeah, yeah. You can do
that
like
little
the squeeze
sideways
face.
Half smile. No, that's this. Look at this.
Oh yeah.
That's contempt. Yeah. If you just take one half of your mouth and kind of crack
it
over to the side, it's contempt.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of got that contempt thing kicking. He's contempt on the right side. Interestingly enough, contempt. We were talking about micro expressions last time, so if you missed that, you probably should go. Well, don't just.
It's got a little bit of Fozzie to him too. And maybe
yeah,
Maybe just a tiny bit of red fraggle. Yeah. Mm.
A little red, the same hair color.
A little bit of
red fraggle. Thought at one moment, dressing him up, he could definitely pull off fraggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. A little, he's more gobo, I think. Or you know who he really looks like is Moki?
Oh, Moki, Moki.
Except Moki was blue and purple, but he kind of looks like Moki in the face.
Well, for everyone who's listening, I'll try to post on Facebook or Twitter or even our website.
He's cute.
Yeah, he's great.
What a good looking dude. Yeah, welcome, Crash.
Thank you very much. So
I can't believe you kept him a secret this whole time. They've been over for like an hour and a half.
This is big premiere, yes.
I know.
Yeah.
So puppet school. It was fun.
It was fun.
Was it taught by my girlfriend, Laura Barbera? She teaches over there.
No, it was two gentlemen. It seemed like the two guys who founded it, actually, because it was Easter.
He has the wireframe glasses.
Blonde, shaggy, dusty hair.
Yes, we saw them. We went to an introductory class because Laura was teaching. And thank you, Laura, pulled me up on stage to improvise a musical number with her. That was really weird, but it was fun. And they did like a little mini workshop, and they showed you, like, they ran Menomina.
And they taught you the eight choreographic basics,
and they ran through it.
At the very end, they taught us how to do the eight steps of just a workout, and they were really happy.
Six, seven, eight.
The faces up in the corners of the camera, and face up towards it, and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And they really loved having me there. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I bet you were brilliant.
Oh, I probably was, but I'm the one
to
pet my ego. There's a ventriloquist there who's making his own, ventriloquist dummy. But I was just having fun. I learned how to make my own puppet. I didn't think that would happen. I didn't think it would turn out that good either.
What a gift, man. Yeah. Best birthday. Wonderful. When was your birthday, Ezra?
It was April 13th.
Happy birthday. Because I was away.
You're away for the time,
Oh, I'm sorry we missed it. Okay. We'll have to do a birthday podcast for Ezra.
Yeah.
We missed your birthday too.
We need to do April birthday because we missed your birthday too.
Mine doesn't really matter. I was working. No, it doesn't. You know, I looked up those motor... We were talking about... this is a sidetrack, but we were talking about motorcycles, and I've been eyeballing motorcycles for the past like 2 months, and I'm like, I really want to get a bike.
Oh, yeah?
I finally found one I like, and it's a 1600cc engine. I'm like, that might be a bit much for me to start out on, but I want a Vulcan Mean Streak. Because don't you think that's what I should ride?
Yes.
Yeah.
What does she ride? A friggin' Vulcan Mean Streak. It's a Kawasaki, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I was just like,
just
man.
The name.
Mean Streak suits you.
I know.
Yes.
It's what I am.
Yeah.
Is that what she rides or what she is? Yes to both. But anyway, so we should do a birthday podcast, maybe where you put together a bunch of tunes that you like.
Okay.
All right. Let's just do like Ezra's birthday podcast. And it'll just be like all music, and you can just, we'll just talk about the songs in between and all Ezra all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, just don't make it suck.
Okay.
Make it good.
Okay.
So, did you have a good birthday, though?
Oh, it was a blast. It was a blast. We, on my actual birthday, we went out and saw the new Bill Hicks documentary, American.
Oh, I'm waiting to see that.
It was great. We saw actually a special screening of it at the Comedy Store with a bunch of comedians.
Oh, wow.
And Bill Hicks' childhood friend and the director, and it was amazing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we saw
when does that open?
Different.
Or has it
opened? It was that Friday that it opened after my birthday. So,
it's open now?
15th, yeah. It's open
Where
now.
Is it? Like at the Lemley or
place? Lemley, and all those smaller independent art house theaters.
Let's go this weekend.
Go over to Pasadena.
Go watch it. I would really like to see that.
Yeah, I want to see that too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. They did a interesting sort of the kid was left in the pictures animation style to it, and it was great.
Oh, neato.
Also met Gallagher that night. So
you did?
Gallagher.
Yeah.
That was random.
Did you have to wear a garbage bag?
No, I didn't. He was outside the Comedy Store. I just walked up and said hi, and then he tried selling me his movies on eBay. It's like, come to eBay. I have all the series, $44.95 on eBay. I'm like, you have a eBay seller name on there or something?
Wow.
Melon Crazy 24 or something?
Yeah, what was his eBay login?
He didn't tell me. He just told me to go to eBay and buy it.
Every once in a while, you'll encounter comedians in the real world, and it doesn't work out too well.
It's kind of surreal.
I had this one incident that happened some years back when, I guess it was about 20 years ago, I was writing Tiny Toons. We had written like two or three seasons of Tiny Toons, and we did a direct-to-video feature called How I Spent My Summer Vacation, which was a lot of fun.
I remember that.
We used Jonathan Winters as the father of Hampton Pig.
Yeah.
And it was Don Messick as Hampton and Jonathan Winters as his father and Edie McClurg as Hampton's
awesome
mother. And they were taking Hampton and Plucky on a miserable cross-country trip. So Jonathan Winters came in. He did the part great, and he was a lot of fun to work with. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't really directing. I only kind of came in and saw, you know, those nice moments when we were recording. You know, he was a lot of fun to work with. And then about 6 months later, I'm up in Santa Barbara. I'm in Montecito, and we're going. I'm up there with my family. We're going for breakfast at this little place, and I see outside on the street Jonathan Winters talking to a young lady, and I go. And he's having a very animated conversation with somebody that I took to be, I don't know if he has a child or, you know, a relative or a friend or something like that. And as we were waiting for our table, I thought, you know, he seemed very nice when I met him in the recording studio. And I would like to go over and say hello to him. And so I walked over and I said, Mr. Winters, you know, I waited for a moment, Mr. Winters. And he said, yes. And he extended his hand. I said, hi, I'm Paul Dini. I worked on Tiny Toons with you. And he goes, yes. And he started talking to me about some very intense way about something that he started to go on and on about. And then I noticed the young woman is running down the street as fast as she could go. And it occurred to me that he had stopped this. He had, was having a conversation with her, and the woman was waiting for an excuse
to exit
because he was kind of off on a tear. And I said, okay, just ride it out. And, you know, you climbed on the surfboard and you ride the tsunami.
Ride the wave, baby.
He is being very funny and he's being very intense and he is talking about everything that comes into his head. And he was very, and he was great. And it wasn't what I thought it would be. He was actually very pleasant.
So he's always running a mile a minute.
Yeah, always, always. And you take your chances when you go and you present yourself to a celebrity when you see when you see them. Like 2 weeks ago, I talked about encountering Woody Allen at Trader Vic's.
Yeah.
And about how I wanted to, you know, just grab him and, you know, shake his hand and everything like that. And there's never a good moment for anything like that. And
well, you saw Charles Nelson Reilly at Musso Frank, too.
Oh, wow.
Remember
that? Our friend Ruth keeps sending people puddings. Like, she used to eat there every Thursday. She and Cooper used to eat there every Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And every time they saw a famous person or somebody she respected, she would send them a diplomat pudding. And she would just, send them a pudding. And then the waiter that they saw every week would take them over a pudding. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the celebrity would, thank you, you know. And so she sent Charles Nelson Reilly a pudding, didn't she?
Yeah, and he was very grateful for it. And Charles Nelson Reilly, it was a little different because...
CNR.
Every Thursday night... What?
I said CNR.
Yeah. Every Thursday night for about 8 years, I would eat at Musso Frank's with our friends Cooper and Ruth, and occasionally Eddie Gordetsky.
Guest du jour.
And Billy Weiss, who's a writer, a producer on Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And it was always a mixed bag of people. Some really interesting people would show up occasionally. We'd have guest star night or celebrity or whoever. Everybody was welcome to come. But Charles Nelson Reilly would...
Muggsy wants to go.
Muggsy, you're welcome. You can. It's chicken pot pie night on Thursday night. I know how much you enjoy a good martini and a chicken pot pie.
Okay, so Charles Nelson Reilly.
So Charles Nelson Reilly was somebody that we never actually got around to. I guess we did at one point, but we would see him there on, you know, on Thursday nights where he would hold court with a table of his friends. And these were like actor friends. And we'd see him there occasionally. And it got to the point where we would see him enough that he would actually come over and like, how are you folks doing over here? And then it would be like, oh, we're fine, sir. How are you? And he goes, oh, I love coming here. I love to see you young people eating in a place like this. You know, it's a wonderful place. I've been coming here for years, back when it wasn't so expensive. And he started getting yelled at
yelling to the kitchen. Awesome.
And I am directly underneath him. And it is suddenly...
Did you have an umbrella?
Yeah, suddenly it's Niagara Falls, you know, because he's going worse than Sylvester. Than Dan.
I was going to say, it sounded like Sylvester the Impression.
It was like Sylvester the Cat, you know, right in Pussycat spitting range. And he's going on like that. And when he would get indignant, he would go off on a tear like that. But it was very funny. And I'm sitting there kind of cleaning my glasses off. And Cooper looks at me and he goes... Calling all bad hats. Who wants his eye wash now? Because only Cooper and I know the bizarre little, you know, like catchphrases from a show like Lidsville, because we played the evil magician Hoodoo on Lidsville, you know, and a Croft show where it's just like, okay, it's a land of living hats. Yeah, sure, why not? You know, and there's an evil magician. Well, if they're hats, there has to be an evil magician.
Yeah.
And he's got all these weird evil props in his giant, sure, whatever, fine. They bought 17 episodes. We're running it. We're all high. We don't care. You know, just run the show. And he flies around a catamaran. It's like, okay, stop with the puns. Enough. We're buying it. We bought the show. But, you know, and I remember the first time I showed you Croft shows like H.R. Puffin stuff. You were sitting there like,
I loved it.
Because we're like 50 years apart in age. And
no, we are not. We're 20.
Okay, 20 20. Years apart. And so all the stuff, all the detritus, the crap of my...
He met me when I was in diapers, and I'll just diaper him as it was.
Yeah, yeah, turnabout is for
gross. Anyway.
All the stuff I watched as a kid, you know, you have to endure now. You know, so you...
I love it, though.
But you saw H.R. Puff
huge
and stuff.
Huge Billy Hayes fan.
Oh, yes, of course.
Not just from Lil Abner, but now also because she was Witchy Poo.
Yes, and also runs Animal Rescue.
Of course. Yes, awesome. Any person who loves dogs is good by
yes.
me.
Yes,
yeah.
But so you know, those nights at Musso's were fantastic, mm-hmm. and so Charles Nelson Reilly was a situation where I guess there was enough familiarity there that you could talk to him afterwards and mm-hmm. and share a word or something, and you know, even without you know appearing to be a fanboy, you know, we eat the same place, so why not you know chat a bit, you know, if you're standing in line waiting to go in. But an off chance encounter with Woody Allen, that would have been nothing but uncomfortable. And actually, when Eddie Gordetsky was over the other day, I said, have you ever met Woody Allen? And he said, yeah, a couple of times in New York. And it was always sort of, you know, what you thought it would be, you know, a little bit like, hi, how are you? And a little bit distant, because, you know, I guess if you're not in, there are certain celebrities that if you haven't known them for a long time, they've kind of gone
beyond. They have enough friends.
They've gone beyond the point of meeting new people.
Yeah. And that's fair.
And that's a little bit sad when you meet somebody or you're working with somebody whose work you idolize and you realize, you know, like, you know,
their friendship cup is full.
Yeah. 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 You're not going to be pals with this guy. And, you know, that's fine because you have to put it all in perspective.
Sure.
You know.
Well, it's nice to not blur that line sometimes, too.
Yeah.
You know, because they want to work with people that can keep that separation.
Yeah. And besides, you know, it's the novelty wears off. You know, it's like, what do you have to talk about? You know, that's
well, hopefully, if you're going to be friends with the person, you have some things in common.
Yeah.
And so it's organic and you don't have to sit there and go, yeah, well, we exhausted all the background information on Zelig, so I guess we're done here. That would be horrible.
That'll be podcast 40.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Ezra saying, I think I've heard all your stories.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
We're done.
But the other night, Alan Burnett and I went to see Tina Fey being interviewed by Steve Martin.
Yes.
And
which was your Valentine's Day gift.
Thank you very much.
Nice. You're welcome.
Seats were awesome.
Yeah, they were in the orchestra pit, man. When I give a Valentine's Day gift, I don't screw around. Yeah. And in addition to that, they each got a copy of Tina Fey's book and Steve Martin's book with the tickets.
Signed.
Wow.
Signed.
There
signed.
You go.
Yeah.
We were about as far away from them as we are from
Ezra and Emily. Yeah. Wow. I'm just sorry I couldn't go with you. You
know, yeah, I'm sorry, too.
I was completely overwhelmed.
You were working
I had
on
just
your
come
show.
Home. I had like 8 or 9, actually, auditions to do that night.
Uh-huh.
Jonathan and I were rehearsing for our magic show, which just went up last Friday.
Right.
We finished our run at the castle Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, I was completely overwhelmed. And I was so excited to see the show.
Yeah.
And I just said, man, I said, how do you feel about taking Alan? And he goes, really? I can still go? I was like, hello, these tickets were like wildly expensive and don't you want to go? And he goes, well, yeah, but he did the very good husband thing of, but not without you, with 1 foot out the door and his jacket already on, but not without you. And I was like, get the hell out of here.
Was like that gauche about it?
You were totally gracious. And then he called Alan and you could almost hear it was like Schwartz's mother when the mom from Christmas Story calls to say that's where Ralphie got the F word. He called Alan and he was like, would you like to go to this? Like that's all I could hear on
dancing.
The other end of the phone. Yeah. And he was like, I'm coming now. And he just got in the car and came right over.
Yeah.
And they went and they had the best time. And Paul was like, he entered the house trepidatiously, like, am I in trouble for going without you? And I was like, God, no. And then he sat down and I was having so much trouble with an audition. And I was so lucky. He just sat and took 10 minutes and directed me. And it made life so easy. So it was just all good, all great.
Yeah.
I got to catch up a little bit.
Yeah.
But how was the show?
It was great. And it was great. And, you know, these are two people I think the world of, and I think they're hysterically funny. And we actually met Tina one night when we were in New York at the
Emmys thing.
Yeah, and she had been out protesting all day. She had been out
for the Writers Guild.
I think she had actually been out working on the show because even though she wasn't supposed to be working on the show, I think that, you know, you never stop if you're
she
the creator of a show.
She was exhausted.
And then she
and
had
yet
been,
still very gracious.
And she had been out protesting 30 Rock, you know, in front of the actual building. And then, you know, then had to go home and get dressed and then come to this event and then be on all night.
Yeah.
And then
it was like an Emmys panel where they had put together the writers and producers from 30 Rock. And Lorne Michaels was there. Alec Baldwin was there.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Adsit.
That's where he met Judah. Scott for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that is. Scott Adsit's nuts. His way back
in.
There we
does.
Go.
Yeah,
almost everyone.
Yes,
not sir. Last time.
Nope. Yeah, it took a break for the Alan Burnetts.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and last time.
And oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
so
yeah,
there
yeah.
was no Scott Adsit in that one, I don't think. Maybe we should go back and stick with
it. Yeah, just dub them in.
Just
But after the show, there was that moment where you could go up and say hello. And so
And she was very... Well, we were talking to Scott anyway, and she came up to talk to him.
Right.
So she was there. But she was very gracious anyway. She was exhausted.
Yeah.
Truly exhausted.
Somebody needed to put her into a cab or tie her to the front of one and drive her home. Yes.
Yeah. But that like was, I said, very
That was the writer's strike, and that was horrible. Everybody was was stressed out by that.
That was a mess. Oh, yeah. But you had a lovely time at the show with her and Steve Martin.
Yes.
Right?
Nice. That was wonderful. And that's just fine, because I do remember one other time. I was at Musso Frank's, oddly enough, and at the next table, and this was one of our Thursday nights, at the next table was Diane Keaton and Steve Martin, and they were having dinner together.
Well, they have to eat somewhere.
Well, yeah, and that was what was really cool, was like seeing actual honest-to-God movie stars out together having a real good time, and you can kind of watch them at a distance. It's like watching bears forage or something. You don't want to get any closer than that. And then there was that moment where somebody came over and, you know, with a menu and asked them to sign it, and they did. And it's like, I'm happy I'm not that person, because it's just sort of like, what would I do with such a thing? You know, celebrity encounters, they're weird when you see them.
So what else did you guys do this week?
Misty had a big magic show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was really good.
It was SRO, which was very flattering. Standing room only.
That was at the Polar Theater in the Magic Castle.
Yeah, that was really nice. Yeah, it was at the Magic Castle. I did a short run with Jonathan Pendragon, who you guys probably recognize from the famous magic team, the Pendragons. And we put together a neat little show. He's been working on a show called Metaphysics. And he and I have been working on some things to kind of go into that show together for a while. And I came home from CIA training, and with 3 days of rehearsal, we put it up. And we're really lucky, because not only was it very well received by everyone in the castle, after the first show, it was standing room only for the rest of the run, which was really flattering, because that's all magicians. Yeah. You know, and that's really cool. And it's a strong testament to his reputation, but also how good the show was. We're really proud of it, you know.
And it's always nice when the magicians come back and they say nice things to both of you.
Exactly.
And they're complimentary.
Well, and I had never, you know, I mean, there was, you know, some things that we both had concerns going into it, not performing together, performing alone. It was like my first time down in the, well, that wasn't my first time, because the Night of the Raven stuff.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Down in the Peller. And so, I mean, there was just like
new,
a bunch,
you know,
of firsts, you know. And his girlfriend, West, produced the show. And so she was anxious as to how we would work together and how would it come off. But he and I approach magic very similarly, which is why I was their choice to work with him. You know, because she said, out of all the magicians we know, not just guy or girl, he wasn't specifically looking for a girl. He was looking for a personality that complemented his. And fortunately, we approach things from a very theatrical perspective. We analyze and we execute things in the exact same mindset, which is kind of neat, because he's been a very good teacher for me that way. But it was very organic. And
yeah,
so
you guys seemed like you worked with each other for a long time on stage, I guess.
Yeah, we really hadn't. You know, I mean, I did a couple shows when he and Charlotte were performing together with them as not only an assistant, but a little featured act every once in a while. But this was, it was really exciting to be performing with a legend, you know, like just on co-billing. That's really cool. And not only that, but to be sharing those experiences with such a receptive audience. And everybody was so warm and so great. And the pieces that he has put together and that I have put together. I mean, you know, we both really did a lot of work on this show, but he brought a couple new pieces that he was working up, and he's got this magic square thing that he does that is just outrageous.
Like halfway through that, I'm like, he's not, and then he started going through the ending of it. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's like the exact kind of stuff that just makes my mind blow.
It melts it.
It's like watching, you know, he's like whipping away curtain after curtain, you know, of, you know, in your mind, like, this is what this and this is what this is and this is what it is.
Yeah, and I don't want
to
give anything away.
And it was just my job to smile
defenses.
And say, he's not done.
Yeah.
And I just, it was so exciting to watch, because I was just literally watching people fall apart in their seats.
And it was really interesting watching, like, the dynamics of your characters, because you were chaos.
Yeah.
And yet you came out in a corset and boots and the
very restricted.
And the very restricted.
That was not an accident. That was my choice.
But and your hair all swept
hair
up
all
and everything.
Very pinned
and
up.
And it's like you we would think that you would be order.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jonathan came
and
out and was very theatrical and very and then
with
very
a
disheveled.
With a sweeping cape and his hair was all crazy and
then,
he was order. Yeah.
And then like
that
he
was deliberate, yeah.
And he'd pull out the cards like there, like that. And then and yet you were always very reserved, and yet you're chaos.
Yeah.
And that was very cool. It was
We had a very Holmes we do in real life actually have a very Holmes and Watson type relationship. And I think my favorite thing is, you know, like I'm one of the only magicians. He tells me I'm the only magician, but I'm sure there are other magicians out there. But I'm the only magician, as far as he admits, that is allowed to give the guy shit. And I do. And you heard it.
Yes.
So it makes us work together very well, because he can be so over the top.
Yeah.
And in one of the shows, we were doing a Steinmeier rope escape. Jim Steinmeier put a real nice version of a rope escape in a recent Genie magazine. It's got David Acer on the cover for you magic nerds. And that's what we performed. And we were working on it. And in the middle of the thing, I looked up and improvised a line to the audience because I was getting tied up, you know, crisscross. And I said, I feel like a roast. And he said, well, it is Easter. And I said, well, then I guess that would make you the ham. And the place erupted. And we were just teasing back and forth. And that's how we sit and talk.
Yeah.
But no one is used to him being spoken to like that on stage, let alone some brassy broad.
That's,
you know,
the one,
so
yeah.
I mean, people were just like, where did she come from?
That's almost the sort of line that is followed by a slight intake of breath, like, and then the release of that.
I couldn't believe my mouth, because we had not okayed that line. And it was like, sometimes my mouth, as you guys know from listening to these, just goes.
What,
and
really?
I go, no. Oh, and but usually here I go, edit that out, and Ezra does. Yeah. But
that's why I'm here.
But that's the joy of live theater.
Yes.
They all get to hear it. And Jonathan was like, well played. And he just went on with the show. But the place just went nuts. Because it was, you know, no one speaks to him that way.
Yeah.
Except his girlfriend and me. You know, and that's why he and his girlfriend are so healthy, because they have this bat back and forth. But his brain goes 60 miles an hour, and without, you know, being able to, you know, go, hey, reel it in. I mean, he is like, phew, off on a tear, as you were saying.
That's what I wanted to say. I don't want to give anything away from your show, but his thinking and his ability to just be right on the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Even when he has to stop and go, okay, that's where I was.
Yeah.
And then he'll be right back with it. And it's racing at 100 miles an hour. And you're going, it's all right. And it's all fantastic. And it's all crazy.
He's brilliant.
That's the showman. That's the showman of him. The weird, and that's the line the edge he dances on is the idea of the controlled showman and the guy with a slight Barnum size to him. But it could go all the way at any moment. It could degenerate into just massive confusion. There's always a little bit of control that he has. So, you know, he knows when to pull it back in and everything.
Oh, he's brilliant.
But
he's
he knows when to pull it back in.
Excellent actor.
You don't necessarily know.
Yeah, it's like he's
constantly... Oh, like the audience.
The audience doesn't know.
Oh, okay.
It's like he's constantly aware of everything that's going on.
Oh, he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that guy. He is one of few magicians I have ever worked with who has never lost control on stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen some things happen to him that are outrageous. And I have also seen some things happen to him that were so serendipitous. I mean, it's, and I don't really, I can't, unfortunately, I can't tell the stories without his permission, because it would be giving it. We should have him on as a guest.
Yeah, we should.
I'll give him
great.
And Wes
Absolutely.
A call and have both of them on, because they would be really fun, you know, just to talk about the show and to be, for him to tell those tales.
Yeah.
Because he has such a great sense of drama, and he'll tell them the way he wants them told. You know, like I said, I don't want to tell tales out of school and expose, you know, whatever.
But this is like what I said last time I talked about Zatanna is that I always think of the character as complete mastery of the stage, meaning her immediate area.
Yeah.
And then once you get a little farther away, then the magic becomes a little more diffuse. But you're in her realm if, you know, she can control you the way she wants to control you, that sort of a thing. And which makes her very powerful. And but it's also the key to any good magician, to your success, to Jonathan's, is like when you are in that area, when you pull a person up on stage, they're yours to play with because they're in the moment.
Well,
and very rarely will you find somebody who actively tries to violate that.
Yeah, it's very rare because people really want to see a good show. We were talking about this last time, you know, about how it's highly unusual to walk out to a hostile audience.
Yes,
usually
that's right.
People want you to do well because they want to be entertained.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So you come out and you love your audience, they love you back so hard because they want to.
Yeah.
They don't want you. It's very rare. Sometimes the Magic Castle, it does happen to magicians where people are sitting there, other magicians are cross-armed going, wow me. But those are very few and far between, because usually the muggles, if you will, want to see good magic. They're there to have a great time. People are all dressed up. They've had a great dinner. They're so excited to be in this private club that's invitation only. It's a big night out. It's a big deal. And it's an expensive night out. So they want a good show. You know, like sometimes the magicians are sitting there tapping their fingers like, well, I've seen this before. And I had, I mean, you know, like you get a mix of everything, you know?
I mean, it's...
And so you get notes after from magicians who say, you know what would make that even better? And usually they're right. Because the ones who stick around to give you notes have been doing this for a long time. I'm doing the Barack Obama pointing thing with my knuckle right now. But they've been doing this for a long time. And a couple of friends, and they really, you know, it's usually friends that stick around. It's not people that just stick their nose in. But we had a couple friends, Whit Hayden and John Carney, for example, came to a show. Whit gave us a brilliant note. And John Carney sat down and just in one sentence put brilliant drama into one of my routines. And he was like, you know what? Try it this way.
John Carney is so good.
Oh my God, he's a genius.
Everything he does looks effortless.
I love him. And I mean, he was so, and it's so nice that they just, you know, like you get these greats and they're curious to see what you're doing. So they come down and those people want to see you do well. You get like the guys that don't ever perform anywhere and have never been booked there before and probably never will be, who do card tricks. And there's nothing wrong with these guys and I don't mean to be down on them. But they sometimes, if you don't have the life experience or an opportunity yourself, things can get petty. I'll just put it that way. We didn't have any of that, but it does exist there, you know, so I'll just, you know, it just happens.
It exists everywhere.
So you just don't deal with that.
Well,
you
I've know? Had that happen to me with some of
it
my writing.
It happens in writing. It happens everywhere. I'm sure sound guys do it. Well, that could have been better mastered. I'm sure people do that all the time, you know, but it's just like, well, maybe it could have, but maybe work harder and get the job away from me next time.
Yeah.
You know, but we were really lucky because magicians were so supportive and it really was standing room only down there. And the guy who books the castle, Jack Goldfinger, Goldfinger and Dove, he's also a magician himself and quite a good one.
Very good. I've seen his routine.
Yeah. And his wife is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning Dove. But he was so happy. He was so happy with the show.
He was so warm and very complimentary afterwards.
He's just a tremendous human being. Yeah. He is great. But everybody was so warm and so nice, and we had a great reception to the show. We're actually thinking of taking it on a run in NoHo, which would be North Hollywood, for a couple of weeks. Yeah. I mean, we'd have to extend it because we only did a 45-minute show down there. So in order to give people their tickets money worth, they'd probably have to be at least an hour 15.
Well, you might, you know, maybe there's a way for you to work some of your big illusions in there. I don't know that if that fits the theme of the show.
Well, we could, and there are other things that we worked up. You know, there's like a painting routine and there's a star routine that we worked on that just weren't as strong as some of the other things, you know, and Jonathan's linking finger rings. We came up with a way to expand that and open it up so that it would make sense, you know, like why are they linked and who unlinks them of chaos and order, who would do which job.
Oh, okay.
And so changing that routine, not the way it works, not the way that it truly functions and the way it connects to the audience, but the way that it's presented so that it's a little more organic within the character realm.
Right.
And like I said, this is where he and I are both Vikings. So, you know, it's like putting that into a character. Character magic is all I do. Because to get up there as Misty Lee, I turn into a kindergarten teacher. You know, I get so nervous doing magic tricks that I become an educator and my hands clasp and my eyebrows go up and all of a sudden I sound really patronizing because I get scared to death.
You go, there are times you go from a controlled magician to a fairy princess.
Yes, exactly. And that's gross to me because that's not who I am at all. You know, I mean, but like to get up there and just be comfortable talking like this. And it was one of those things I learned at CIA training. Honesty and rapport are so important to me that I have to be a character to give myself permission to do the dirty work of magic, if you will. You know, which like, and then people go, it's not dirty work. It's only dirty work. If you make it dirty work, it's the, you know, it's the secret. It's the mystery. It's this, it's that. And I'm like, it's a fib. You know?
Well, the audience knows it's a fib too.
And they like that.
But they love being fibbed to. It's like when I tell a story, it's a bunch of hooey that I made up.
Yeah. But, I thought you were going to say hobos. I don't know why.
Well, hobos. Yeah. But it's like,
John,
you know,
Hodgman,
here I want to tell you a story about,
and
I say, I want to tell you a story about a sea serpent. You know, it's like, okay, sea serpents don't really exist, but I'm going to spin a yarn and hopefully you'll buy it and you'll get into it. Same with magic. It's like you're telling a story and you're dazzling people with something that they don't know. And even if they do have a little bit of knowledge of how certain things are done, it's the artistry and
it's the story that you imbue those elements. Objects with. It's the purpose with which you imbue them. But I mean, it's just, that was so important to me to learn, you know, and so standing in and playing chaos, no problem. I can do that in a heartbeat. But going up there as Misty Lee, I just can't do it. And it's like, that's okay. Because I have to give myself permission to be that. person. So it was just, everything flows into each other, and it was a fascinating experience.
I actually pitched Jonathan an idea for an illusion based on a Edgar Allan Poe poem that he likes. Because it occurred to me, like, what if you did something like this? And I told him the idea, and I don't really know how to pull off the mechanics.
Way to pitch it to him instead of me, dude. Thanks for that. I've been begging him for years to write something for me, and he's like, You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday at this function that we were attending, and the guy said, well, you know, you do have a writer within 1,000 feet of you usually at any time. And I said, yeah, but that writer is usually pulled in 60 different directions, like he's being drawn and quartered on a bunch of different projects and doesn't have time to do that.
We've written some stuff together. I'll gladly write you some stuff. But this thing was... This wing was something that I...
Nice. Ezra's going... yeah, everybody's like red and uncomfortable. Emily's like shifting in her seat.
She's
like,
using her powers on you, Paul. Look out.
Okay. All right.
I'm not mirroring his body. Oh, I am mirroring his body language. Look at that.
There you go. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. It works.
Well, we have some ideas. It's just a matter of how we...
Anyway. And it was organic. I know exactly why you did this. So yeah. I'm just giving you garbage. So don't take it. You're not in trouble when we hang up here.
Right.
You're not at all. And I'm saying that, and I'm being recorded saying it. So if you are in trouble, just harken back to
next week.
You won't be.
Hey, where's Paul? Oh, he was vanished to the fifth dimension for 90 days.
Good luck finding him.
Yes, that's right.
No, I'm kidding. But anyway, so you pitched Jonathan Illusion. You probably shouldn't say it on here.
I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay.
Because I actually don't know how it would work out, how to do it. So I'll tell you about it, and you know, maybe, you know.
No, if you gave it to him, give it to him.
I didn't give it to him, but it's just here's something I'd like to see, you know. So, I mean, I think even though the poem is from a man's point of view, I think anybody could do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very simple
poem. Oh, no, it's
poem.
Good that you gave it to him, because he loves Poe so much.
Well, you know, is when we were talking about what do you do for Edgar Allan Poe and, you know, the Poe stories that we were talking about. Anyway, so...
Was there anything... You had a couple Twitter questions you wanted to do before we wrapped up here, yeah?
I think so.
Okay, let's play our awesome little soundbite.
Questions from the fans.
There he is.
All right.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay.
Woo.
Okay.
We have a question here from Trungle Fever.
Of course we do.
Trungle Fever.
Trungle Fever.
They just get better and better.
They are.
Man, it makes me want to, you know, take Misty Lee off as my Twitter name and come up with something better. I saw somebody had Ella Has a Unicorn was her Twitter name, and I thought, man, I missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want a unicorn.
Mine's just Strange Glue.
That's also good. Also great.
I was like Paul Dini, Paul M. Dini,
PM Dini. It's Paul underscore Dini, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got nothing. this question from Trungle Fever says...
Hello, Trungle Fever.
Hello, Trungle. Which superhero would you like to see get the Batman animated series treatment? Huh.
Well, you can't really answer that one, can you?
Well, no. I mean, I'm thinking like... Well,
because you're giving one to a superhero right now.
Well, yeah. But let's go back and play in the DC Universe, because this is about Batman.
Yeah.
So I'll keep it mostly to the DC Universe.
Polka Dot Man. He's not a hero.
What the hell? I'll be selfish. Mutant Texas. There you go.
There you go.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice.
You think there's a Batman the animated series, like a noirish, dark take on Mutant Texas?
Well, I mean, I interpreted the Batman animated treatment, I'd say 65 half hours. Running in the afternoon every day.
This is Paul Dini,
like,
the business
And then picked
man.
Up for like two seasons after that.
And given a little freedom with it too.
Yes, give me over 100 episodes of Mutant Texas and I will be very
And a Shirley Walker type orchestra and Gene McCurdy.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, you know, Gene McCurdy, nice. Yes. Sure. I would use the Dynamic Partners guys, but I would also put together a little combo of Western Swing, you know, to be in
Riders
the background.
Riders in the Sky, baby.
Riders in the Sky. I would get Joey in and Ranger Doug and Slim and Woody to do like little themes and little. I would actually have them play to I think this is what they did with High Wire Hop, the for the Birds short that they did.
Really cute
for Pixar. Was they went in, they came up with the music on the spot as they were watching the cartoons. So I'll be selfish and say, well, superhero, Ida Red is a superhero.
Yes, she is.
She's a superhero. So,
she rides a Jaguar.
Yes, she does.
And
not the car either, the actual animal. So I'm gonna be greedy, you know. Screw
By the way,
other guys.
Jaguar has a new little 2-seater convertible.
They do?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like you to take a look at it.
I like the way you think.
Mm-hmm. I thought of you the other day. They were talking about it at the nail place.
Can you poof up about 70 grand?
Well, easily.
Oh, good. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, good.
Okay. I can get my Vulcan Mean Streak. You can get your Jaguar convertible.
Good. We can race around.
Jaguar.
There they go. The two people.
Ezra's going, are you guys kidding me right now?
She reached into her hat and brought out a stack of Monopoly money.
Penny farthing time. Yeah. He's like, whatever happened to the penny farthing?
Falling.
She paid for counterfeit money.
Falling. Oh my God, I forgot all about that. What?
Well, you poof up a stack of money and we pay for that. It's like, well, thank you. I've never seen $100 bill. Well, who's that on the front of this?
Rashi.
A sock monkey. Yes. It's like, ha ha.
Sucker. In sucker we trust. What's the last question? How many more questions?
We got a couple more. Actually, this works well with... I actually asked a question out there because I want to do some...
You asked a question, so you're going to read answers from Twitter?
Well...
Answers from the fans. What the hell is that?
Actually, as long as I was asking questions, I put it out on Twitter earlier.
Get on with it.
I said that I'm looking to do some t-shirts of some of the characters, like Jingle Bell and Tashi and some of the others and Polly and the Mutant Texas gang. And without hesitation, I got three things back. Mutant Texas.
Nice.
And I wrote back, you know, Ida Red or everybody? And they said, everybody.
Wow.
So, so I think, you know, we do have a lot of designs. Nobody's seen of Ida that I could come up with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we've got a couple that you were working on with the brown background. Remember, we were talking about those before?
Nice.
Maybe we should work those up for I don't know if we have time for Comic-Con.
Well, maybe not a booth at Comic-Con, but I think I was talking to Scott Mosier about, you know, they're selling a lot of things on Dazzle, I think. Is that what it's
called?
Zazzle. Zazzle. Oh, yeah, Zazzle. He was encouraging me to go on Zazzle, and I think they're selling some podcast, Smodcast stuff on
Zazzle. Yeah, the
nice
thing about Zazzle is you don't have overhead, because they just go ahead and do that. You don't make a lot of money on that. You know, you make like $2-3 a t-shirt. But $2-3 a t-shirt is $2-3 worth of t-shirt you don't have sitting in your garage waiting for it to
and
sell.
And on coffee mugs, on mouse pads, and keychains and other
Cafe
things.
Cafe Press does that too, but the Zazzle stuff is really high quality.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know...
You know what we should do? We should order some Smodcast stuff, see what the quality of it is when it comes, or ask Scott if he has any on hand, because usually Kevin buys his own stuff just to have it, you know?
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, I'll check it out.
So we'll talk to them.
And because I would like to get on our site, we have a merchandise store, so if we could have a link to the Zazzle site. And Stephanie's done a lot of really great model shots.
Stephanie does beautiful work.
Of Ida Red that no one's seen.
I love
Stephanie
so much.
And I'm actually thinking very strongly about doing a comic strip and a weekly comic strip about Kelso, the coyote.
Yeah.
The coyote leader.
A good idea indeed.
And because he is such, he was sort of a supporting character in the series, but I like him because he is sort of the voice of pissed off redneck America. And there's a lot
of
fun.
Are you qualified to write that?
What?
Really?
Well, maybe not. But
Mr. Two-Seater Jaguar?
Well, was Walt Kelly? Was Walt
Kelly? Well, we don't have it, so I guess what are we talking?
Was Walt Kelly, you know, qualified?
I didn't know Walt
Kelly.
I only know his daughter.
Yes, of course.
Who I love.
But, he wrote a lot of, you know, political humor from that point of view and stuff like that. And also, there are parts of...
Well, you know what? You are certainly qualified to step into another character's point of view. I apologize. Sure. That sounded like a barb, and it really wasn't intended to be. I was just teasing you. But no, of course you are.
I mean, it's interesting because with a character like Kelso, he's very much an anti-hero. So he can go out and have an absolutely, you know, reprehensible point of view about things. But at the same time, in some lights, he's not wrong.
Right.
So, you know, I think I may experiment with him. So,
looking for sympathizing viewpoints there.
Yeah. Cool. You know, just the voice of the common beast, I guess. What's happening with Tower Prep Season 2? We're waiting and hoping to get a pickup on that. We're hoping to be able to go back and get that going. Question
was
from Carl Annadale. Also said, can we get it on ABC Family Channel? That's not likely because Cartoon Network owns the rights to... they'd have to sell it to ABC Family. Askinia says, why was Tower Prep so badly marketed by Time Warner? It's not really Time Warner's fault. It is and it isn't. I mean, Time Warner is a huge company. And the different companies within that company have autonomy in how they do things. And many times their budget restrictions and other concerns and other shows are all fighting for a certain amount of the promotion dollar. I guess that's the best way to answer that question. It's just...
But also, it was a pioneering move for
them. It was a new show.
They didn't really know. You know, and I mean, it's, you know, was it badly marketed? That's
debatable. But the thing is, it was a hard sell. It was a hard show to produce. It was an ultimately very gratifying show. And I'm thrilled that it has so many fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at everything else that's out there for kids. That's fairly easy stuff to market. It's all fairly frothy, fun entertainment. Right. Tower Prep's a little more challenging. So
because it was a pioneering endeavor.
Yeah.
You're slashing with a machete in places where no one has really tread before. Mm-hmm. And that was really one of the things that you were most proud of.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, was it poorly marketed? Well, how do you market that? You know, I mean, I guess that would be the question that I would ask back. Yeah. And I think everybody tried as hard as they could.
Yeah.
Let's just hope that season two is different and gets a huge, huge demographic and wide exposure.
Yeah.
Expose yourself.
Yeah. And
wait. Don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I meant.
Keep that under wraps there.
Just Demands for Mutant Texas t-shirts. Uh-huh. There are about three of those.
Imitation crab or real? No, we already answered that.
Real all the way.
No, imitation. Go ahead.
This is from Doctor, but it's spelled with a seven in the middle, Who. So it's Doc 7-O-R Who.
Oh, they're using the seven as the T?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I saw the new episode, by the way. It was really fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
The accidental astronaut or something?
Yeah, the impossible
The impossible astronaut. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Having written for so many different media forms, is there a particular one you enjoy or just intuitively get the best?
Yes, there is.
I'd say it's animation.
Absolutely.
When I'm left to my own devices, you know, and I work with a really terrific director, there's nothing I like better than that, you know.
And that's your home base, too.
Yeah.
This guy, people who are listening, boys, girls, ladies, gentlemen, he dreams in cartoons. He wakes up in the morning and he explains his dreams. He dreams in vivid, wild Technicolor in animation. He really, truly does. It is part of who he is.
Well, the other night we were going to bed and you had to pry the sketchbook out of my hand because I was drawing gags for this.
I think I hit you with it.
Yeah. It's like go to bed and it's like one more gag. And I don't draw, you know, characters on model or anything like that, but I can draw a little sketch things and I can, you know, I showed you that.
You can draw characters on model. You just don't have the patience to.
No.
You are an excellent artist.
I just scribble it till I get to the gag and, you know, show what the payoff is and then I file that down. And then, you know, sometimes I'll just write it up that way, you know, as it appears in my sketchbook in the script.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I'll bring in the sketchbook and make Xeroxes and give it to the director and say like this only.
But that was one of the things, I mean, I actually put my hand on his the other day and I said, animation is what you are.
Yeah.
And he was like, I know. Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things. We were talking about something that we can't talk about here.
Mm.
But I just said, this is part of what you are. And I said, if you ever wondered what you were destined to do, this is it. This is organic. This is your thing. And he was like, I know. And he was just so grateful and resigned to it. It was a very sweet moment.
Well, just because I asked on Facebook along with the Twitter questions and all sorts of resources we have. Donovan Jones asks, any chance we'll see Peyton Riley in the comic books anytime soon or ever again?
Well, there's a question if you'll see me in the comics anytime or ever again.
Peyton was the ventriloquist.
Yes,
Peyton was the ventriloquist.
Female ventriloquist.
Peyton was an interesting character because you know, when I first came up with her, I thought it would be fun to switch. They had killed off the ventriloquist in the comics. And, you know, I was really sorry to see him go because I always loved that character. And I thought, well, if they're not going to bring him back, or at least they're not going to bring him back anytime soon, what about passing Scarface on to somebody else? And Scarface becomes sort of like this vehicle that people, that mentally screwed up people, you know, speak through. And anybody can be possessed by Scarface. It could be a kid. It could be a priest. Mm-hmm. It could be, fascinating who gets their hands on the dummy. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do like a Bonnie and Clyde type thing, you know, where actually you have him kind of sweet on a girl and you actually do, instead of the Joker Harley thing where, you know, one is mean to the other, like he really looks out for her and that they're really kind of in love and that Scarface is always with her. And that was like one of the fun things with the book early on was Scarface had gotten destroyed and yet Peyton is still talking to him and she goes to a closet. There are about a dozen other dummies in there. So she just takes out another one and she just had a bunch of them made. And I liked Peyton because she kind of came from a Gotham crime family and made her way around there. And so it was fun initially introducing her and then bringing her in as kind of a love interest who's used and then dumped by Tommy Elliott, who's Hush.
Yeah.
And I love the idea that I make this whole little world. And that was what I loved about my run on Detective and Streets of Gotham, was that I would sow seeds years in advance and then get back to them. Like even with years ago, I did this story with Alex Ross called Case Study about the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a throwaway line like, you know, oh yeah, before he had the accident, we'd see him around town all the time. You know, we call him, I forget what his name was, like Sonny or Jack or Hap or, you know, he always seemed to have a different name. And that was important to me. And I went back to that in Streets of Gotham when I told the flashback story about Martha Kane and Thomas Wayne coming together. There's a boy they're kind to. And it's name is Sonny, and that becomes the Joker. And then
For those of you who didn't catch that,
and there was some debate on fan forums. It's like, I think that kid grows up to be the Joker, and it's like, absolutely he does, because he's a kid they try and help, and you know, you get the idea. And if I had more time to play with it, I was going to put the idea that maybe they were going to get him adopted by somebody, or maybe even try and adopt him themselves, or make him, you know, Thomas's ward or something, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. But I had to kind of, you know, shortchange a bunch of things to finish the story out. But I did like the idea that he had this brush. They were kind to him, and then he was taken away and subjected
ripped
to
away.
This,
he was ripped away
to this horrible Dickensian, horrific, you know, he becomes the virtual slave of this monstrous gangster. So that when we first see the Joker in the thing, even though we've seen him as a kid, I don't let on. Then we have a flashback kind of midway, in the time stream where the Joker first shows up in Gotham, and the first thing he does is brutally murder this guy. And nobody could understand why he was quoting these lines back to him and everything, as he was slashing his stomach and leaving him to be eaten by hyenas. And then only later, when the guy is brutalizing the little 8-year-old kid, you realize that, oh, wait a minute, I think that was the Joker. And yeah, this guy took the Joker away so he wouldn't, Sonny away so he wouldn't talk, beat the crap out of him, you know, broke him down to nothing. And I think at some point Sonny escaped, you know, got away and just drifted into a life of crime. He was so broken at that point, he couldn't even face Thomas and Martha Wayne again. He could never find them. And then years later,
and he felt like they abandoned him.
They had felt, you got resentful. He became resentful. So if anything, when he heard that they had been shot, he probably, I don't think he killed them like in the first movie, but
that's what they get. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, they had it coming.
Yeah.
Joke's on them. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
And then that just set the stage for him to become the Joker.
Wow. That's great. So any news on Peyton?
I really think she's at the bottom of the bay.
Yeah.
I kind of want to leave her there. I mean, I had an idea to bring her back at one point, but I always thought of her as sort of like one of those girls that was showed up in like a Will Eisner spirit story, you know, a troubled past, and they always wound up getting shot at the end, and Eisner would always create another one for the next story. So, you know, I would rather have, I like those stories about her, and I would just rather have her, you know, disappear. If somebody else wants to bring her back, that's up to them.
Well, like you just said, that the character, you designed it to be sort of passing to another person.
And I think somebody else gets Scarface. You know, the one that she had is in the Batcave. But even there, in foreshadowing, when Batman and Zatanna put the dummy in the cave, Zatanna talks about how much she hates puppets. And that was because I had that whole puppet, the whole Stringleshank story in mind for when I did her book, that I wanted to bring that out as some phobic. So I'm always planting seeds. They're always in there. So,
all right, last one. Here we go.
Last one. I forget. I didn't write down who sent this in, but I'm sorry. So I apologize. But it says top three best theme songs from 80s cartoons. Let's go around the room. Like
top three
80s
gem.
Truly Outrageous.
Yeah,
Outrageous. I gotta admit, that's a good one.
G.I. Joe is another very catchy one.
He'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. Yep. G.I. Joe is there.
Gummy bear.
Bouncing here.
That was 90s.
Yeah, that was later, 80s. Right?
Was it 80s?
86, 80, you know, around mid-80s.
Oh, you wrote for that, didn't you?
No. I think Evanier did.
He's like, deny.
Yeah. No, Evanier wrote the Wuzzles, I think.
Yeah, he did. Wuzzles, I think he did write the Wuzzles, yeah.
Thundercats.
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 Thundercats. Yeah, that was a good one.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
That wasn't really a song.
I am Adam, Prince of
Eternity. Yeah, it's just, song.
Just him talking.
No, it's just a statement, you know.
It's just like a mushroom wheel
Yeah. No one can tell the difference between me and He-Man. The same body.
I don't know the theme song to the Snorks.
Oh, you
know. I know the la, la, la from the Smurfs. That wasn't really the
Snorks
theme song.
Was,
really.
Yeah, different.
What else?
Munchy Cheese. That was terrible.
Machichi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I saw one of those at Pavilions the other day. I took a picture of it, and I was like, oh, no. They're bringing those dolls back. I thought, no. We don't need to see them monkeys in diapers anymore.
No. DuckTales.
No. Oh, DuckTales. Yeah. Yeah. Was DuckTales.
Yeah, 86.
Was 86?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
DuckTales. Woo.
Yeah.
How about Droids?
Well, that was on my list. I was just going to get to that. Yeah. And those were the two that I... Ewoks droids. And droids.
Remember that action figure I tried to sell? Remember we talked about
that? Oh, the droid Dassault action figure.
The 15-cent Dassault action figure.
Yeah. The droids.
Paul leapt over the table and beat me about the head and neck with. Droids. It? Here is my dime. Here is my dime.
I liked
my God.
I liked the droids theme song. That was written by Stuart Copeland.
It was?
Yeah. And the song had nothing to do with drugs. It was just a song about, from the point of view of some, he said, I'm writing this from the point of view of C-3PO. I think the song was called In Trouble Again or something like that. It was about robots and how it's their lot in life to be chased around and everything. And the Ewoks theme, at least the first season, was written by Taj Mahal. And I remember meeting Taj Mahal and talking to him. And that's like one of the great jazz singers of all time.
Yeah.
Such a soulful guy. Actually, Linda Ronstadt had the suggestion. You know who would write a great theme song? Taj Mahal. And so she set the whole thing up. That was back when she was dating George Lucas.
Yeah.
And so we all had a night where we trooped off and met Taj Mahal. And he was wonderful. And then he wrote this really cool percussive thing. It was like my number one choice. My number two choice would have been Sun Ra, who also would have done something. Except the title theme song would have been 4 hours long. 4 hours long, percussive. And then about halfway through, Sun Ra probably would have gone like, Ewoks! Bears in space! Loving everybody in space! And now Sun is gone, so we'll never hear his version of the 4 hour Ewok theme song. But Sun Ra doing the Ewoks would have been great. So, but so, we had Taj.
So, but now really we all gave ours. What would yours be? Did we name them already?
I think we covered them. Like, you know, my theme songs, you know, I didn't like a lot of the 80s cartoons, truth to tell, you know. But I go back to like Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, and
that's not 80s though.
No, that's like Stone Age, but it's like,
no, that's Flintstones.
That's the 50s, but even then I wasn't even alive then. But I was listening to, you know, it was like when I was a kid, I all that stuff. The best theme song I think, and this again, it has nothing to do with the characters at all, is This Is It, the theme song to the Bugs Bunny show. Overture, curtain lights. This is it, the night of nights.
Yeah. You want to hear an embarrassing story?
Rehearsing and nursing apart. What?
When I was in McComber's, which was a show choir group that I had a college scholarship
to. It's embarrassing already.
Okay. So it's true. I had a college scholarship to do show choir. He gave us the music to This Is It. And I thought that's what we were doing. But it was the Kenny Loggins song.
This is it.
And I got so excited because I thought we were doing the Warner Brothers thing. And
were
I was
you
like,
out there in like a little yellow jacket and a straw hat
like,
and a cane?
I just saw the title. I hadn't seen the sheet music yet. Like I hadn't turned the page, you know what I mean? And it just like said, This Is It, arranged by Stuart Scott, who was our director. And I was like, I know exactly what we can do. We can have the Looney Tunes characters. And I think those mascot costumes are really cheap. And he's like stroking his chin and looking at me going, this is very interesting. Like, and I'm like, well,
where
no. And I mean, it would be
this?
Like, and he was like, that's really fascinating. And you're very impassioned. And he was like totally eating up the fact that I was being
asshole.
You know, like I had no idea. And he let me totally humiliate myself. And he goes, that would all be great. But we're doing the Kenny Loggins song. And I went, oh, well then strike all the Looney Tunes stuff because it doesn't make sense anymore. I'm just going to go cry in the corner alone. And
I
like,
have never heard this story before and I love it. Because one, it deals with the Looney Tunes and it... And, also,
and my embarrassment.
Well,
yeah,
less
great.
That,
yeah.
But I love your enthusiasm for the Looney Tunes because I know you like the characters and everything.
Yeah.
But the fact that you would get so excited about doing it in show choir, I think that's wonderful. Also, you were kind of a gleek, weren't you?
No, actually. Okay. Even when I was doing it, I was doing it tongue-in-cheek, like, uh-huh. It was really fun, though. I mean,
yeah.
McComber's was a unique situation because it was a junior college thing, and they still have it. There are still McComber's. And you travel around all of Michigan.
Yeah.
And you set up your own risers, and you do, you know, like they were doing modern arrangements. We did a Beatles medley and stuff like that, of course, because we're in show choir. You know, but it was very Glee. It's exactly what we did. And it was guys and girls were paired up. I think there were 14, 12 of us. I don't know. But there were 12 of us, and everybody, you know, like we, the choreography, everything would switch, but it was all really well choreographed by a guy named Andy Haynes.
Uh-huh.
We worked with John Jacobson, the show choir, the jazz hands guy on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We worked with him. Actually, that was in high school. I did that. Boy, I did that for a long time. I need to stop talking about it now.
It's all boy.
But Ezra did it too.
Yeah, I did. I did the whole song and dance.
I was in boys' choir.
Bunch of choir kids. Here we are.
And, yeah, Stevenson, a bunch of boys all wearing blazers and singing Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming for the Christmas concert.
Oh, no, see, that's worse than show choir.
Lo, how a rose air blooming. Sounded like a bunch of bizarros. From tender fingers sprung.
Why don't you sing us out? Because we're done. Go ahead.
Lincoln came a floweret bright mid the cold of winter when half spent was the night.
Can you medley choir voice into Gummy Bears, the theme song?
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. No applause. No applause for Bizarro Boy Choir. No, no, thank you.
Goodbye, everybody.
Now, me will not sing. Bring a torch, Jeanette Isabella.
That's how you not sing that. Goodbye, everybody. Let's go real quick before he starts.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bring a torch, Jeanette Isabella. That's all I know.
Totally called his bluff. All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. See oh, ya. My God, Paul.
Hello.
This has been another episode of RadioRashi.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can leave comments and reviews on iTunes or directly on RadioRashi.com. We're also now on social network sites like Twitter and Facebook. Leave us questions or just like us. And don't forget, tell your friends.